On this episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast, we'll talk about premature resurrection. Well, hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Ordinary Faith Podcast. As always, I want to say thanks to the band Legacies for providing the soundtrack to this podcast. And look, we are here. I'm here. And man, I do apologize that this episode is about 3 weeks late. You know, my intentions certainly were to be able to keep new podcast episodes coming during this time of social distancing, but I've discovered, maybe like many of you, that working at home with a five-year-old constantly in my presence is not the most conducive setting for creating, recording, and producing new content. So that's been more of a challenge than I had anticipated, and I do apologize, especially if you had been looking forward to new episodes coming out on a regular basis. But what I'd like to share today represents some thoughts that I've been mulling over for a little while. And while they certainly felt really timely 3 weeks ago as I began processing through and preparing for this, I don't think that they've lost their relevance today or really any day. So if you'll permit me, I'd like just to unpack some thoughts that have been rattling around in my head and my heart over the past couple of months, really, as we've been facing this COVID-19 crisis together. A few weeks ago on episode 54, I shared about the idea of negative space, this idea that we're in a time where busyness has been stripped away, giving us more space to bring into focus the things that matter most. And so if you didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, I'd encourage you to scroll back a little bit and give that one a whirl, because today I just want to take it one step further and uncover a little more of this great revealing that I think is happening in this season, if we're willing to let it. So I'm recording this episode here on May 11th, which means that much of our country has been under social distancing protocol for a full 8 weeks or more. And for about the last half of this time, conversations have largely shifted from how do we save lives to how do we get back to our lives. Social distancing has proved difficult. The economy is suffering, unemployment is skyrocketing, and so we've turned from talking about what we're willing to sacrifice to just wanting to get over it and start things up again. And I know there can be a lot of rhetoric behind some of these conversations, and my point is not at all to say that there is really necessarily a right or a wrong thing here, right or a wrong procedure or way to move forward. I think, hopefully, we're all just doing the best we can. And I think it's possible to want to protect lives and to want to get people back to work and out of isolation. Those are both good things. We want wisdom in discerning how to balance those two sides of the scale. But conversations around the idea of getting the economy back up and running are definitely intensifying, and there are certainly many good and practical reasons for this, and there's also the fact that many people are just simply fatigued. These past 2 months have worn us down. We've given up huge parts of our lives. We have lingered with unanswered questions and uncertain futures. It feels like significant portions of our lives have been completely wiped away, opportunities lost, events canceled that we can never get back. We're tired of it, honestly, and we're grieving it, and we just want to move on and to get back to some sense of normalcy. And again, hear me, that's all totally understandable. I'm there too in a lot of ways. We're all thinking about it, and we're all feeling it. Now, the worry is, of course, is that if we rush back to normal too quickly or too soon, we'll see a quick spike in COVID-19 cases and once again endanger our healthcare system, and in doing so, endanger thousands more lives. Coming back too soon, too quickly, before we truly have more of a handle on this disease could be disastrous. Now, let me go ahead and nerd out on you a little bit here. See, I am a Harry Potter fan. Now, it's not like I spend a lot of hours on Harry Potter wiki pages or anything like that, but I do love the whole wizarding world. I was a senior in college as an English major when the Sorcerer's Stone was released in the U.S., and for those who have no idea what I'm talking about, that's the first book in the Harry Potter series. And that was also the first book that we read. Again, I was an English major, and we had a senior seminar class on contemporary literature, and that was the first book that we read. And I'll tell you what, that was a bundle of fun. Try having a discussion about Hogwarts, a magical school of wizardry, at a conservative evangelical liberal arts college with a class full of 20-year-olds who already think that they know everything, myself included. Now, at any rate, I loved the books, and I devoured each one of them as they were released. The movies, obviously, they weren't perfect, but they were still magical. And more than anything, I have loved introducing the books and the characters and the movies to my kids as they have come of age. And this past year really struck a melancholy chord with me at Christmas time when I realized as we were watching the movies again with my older two kids that that would likely be the last time I'd sit on a couch with them to watch Harry and his friends take on Voldemort. See, we typically have to wait 2 or 3 years between viewings to keep it fresh and enjoyable, and so likely by the time we're ready to rewatch the series again, my eldest son will be out of the house. Now, on the other side, of course, I have a 5-year-old, and so in a few years, he'll be ready to start reading the books, and I get to enjoy it all over again. But I digress. I'm all over the place. Harry Potter. Those of you familiar with the storyline will know about something called the Resurrection Stone. It's one of 3 items that are known as the Deathly Hallows, which when in possession of a single owner, those Deathly Hallows allow the person to have the power over death. Now, the Resurrection Stone was said to be able to bring back to life the loved ones of the stone's owner. So if you turn the stone 3 times in your hand, voila, the dead live, or so the legend went. Now, the legend also said that the first owner of that stone was a man named Cadmus Peveril, and he used it to bring back his lover after her untimely passing at a young age. He discovered, however, that her return was incomplete. She was in a shadowy form, brought back from the afterlife into the present life, merely a shade of her former self, as if a veil were still separating them. And as the story goes, this incomplete resurrection drove Cadmus mad, and he eventually took his own life, so that he could finally be reunited with his lover once again, albeit in death. Now, spoiler alert here. If you've never read, you've never watched the Harry Potter series, first of all, that's entirely on you at this point. But I will still be considerate and let you skip ahead maybe 30 seconds or 60 seconds starting now. So again, if you are familiar with the story, you know that this Resurrection Stone ends up in Harry Potter's hands. At the Battle for Hogwarts, Harry understands that in order for Voldemort to be defeated, Harry himself must die. He accepts this and he goes out to face his fate. And with the stone in his possession, he uses it to bring back his loved ones, his parents, his Uncle Sirius, and one of his mentors, Remus Lupin. Speaking with them bolsters his courage, and their presence comforts him as he lays his life down for the cause. Now, one of the things that makes Harry such an admirable character is his selflessness. Now, of course, as a young boy coming of age through the number of books in the whole series, he certainly has his share of selfish moments, as we all do. But over and over again, and always when it matters most, Harry is able to choose the path of the greater good over his own self-serving interests. Even at the end, when he finds himself in possession of all 3 of the Deathly Hallows, making him the most powerful wizard on Earth, he shuns the temptation to wield them. He leaves a stone on the floor of the forest, presumably to be lost forever. He destroys the Elder Wand so that no one, not even himself, can claim that much power. Even his motivation and his heart behind resurrecting his loved ones, unlike the legend of Cadmus Peveril, is done with selfless motives. He brings them back only when the fullness of time has passed and he's ready to lay his own life down. See, Cadmus sought resurrection because he couldn't handle the idea of death and what it had done to him. Harry sought resurrection because he knew the only way forward was, to quote Kylo Ren from another fantasy sci-fi adventure, "Let old things die." Now, I've clearly reached my nerd quota for the day, so let's come back to our present moment. We're currently in a place of death. Literally, the COVID-19 virus has brought death to our doorsteps in an unprecedented manner. But even more widespread than the virus itself is the impact it's having on our lives. I've talked to so many people over the past weeks and months who have had very hard days and very hard weeks because of the loss of life as we know it. And it's forced us to face ourselves in ways that make us really uncomfortable. We're just not great, most of us, of sitting with our thoughts. We've grown so accustomed to distraction and busyness as ways to cope with the dark places in our minds and in our hearts. But now that busyness has been stripped away, I listened recently to a conversation on Jonathan Martin's Zeitcast, where his guest William Matthews spoke into this moment, and he pointed out the increasing anxiety that many are feeling in these quarantine days. Anxiety, he said, is having to wrestle with our inner selves in a way that we usually keep covered with distraction. And I think he's probably right. I myself, I've had to battle moments and days, even extended periods of time, like a week of depression, fighting off those thoughts because of the way this cultural disruption has forced me to sit with myself and my thoughts. Busyness, productivity, to-do lists, a never-ending list of personal, business, and family events keep those thoughts buried most of the time. But now there's space for them to bubble up and make their case. And here's the thing. That's not necessarily a bad thing. At the core of many of these inner thoughts are questions of identity, questions of belonging and purpose, questions that often have simple answers, but answers that are excruciatingly difficult to come by. And having this space to feel those feelings, to ask those questions, to mull over those thoughts, that can actually be a good thing. This season of disruption is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for individuals, for organizations, for churches, for families, for all of us to encounter meaningful change because deep things are now being revealed. Our idols have been laid bare. The things that matter most are coming into focus. There's not really an escape, though Netflix and Hulu are certainly willing to oblige, but we are, in a way unlike any time before, able to contend with what is actually in us. Personally and organizationally, we have a powerful opportunity to evaluate. Now, one thing's clear as we move forward. Things will not be the same, not for a long, long time. Perhaps not ever. And honestly, I hope not ever. Most of us have lived at an unsustainable pace. We're so, so busy, and we wear that busyness like a badge of honor. We obsess over things that don't matter when we place our value in things that matter even less. The economics and the plain logistics of this pandemic and the fallout that will ensue pretty clearly point to the fact that some things have to die. There are ways of living and working and entertaining and so on that simply will not be possible moving forward, not for a while. And there are things inside of us that need to die as well. Idols we've carved, activities or achievements we've valued over people, a pace that's killing us, a level of consumption and consumerism that's numbing us, watered down belief in things that mattered most, avoidance of relational intimacy and connection. There are things we believed about ourselves that need to be put to death, finding value and identity in anything other than Jesus Christ. We have got to learn to die to that old self and learn again what it means to live as new creatures in a new creation. See, the world, I believe, is going to be made new on the other side of this. At least we have a chance to see that happen. And it would be a shame if we entered that new world still clinging desperately to the old. The trouble is that we're just not comfortable with death. We are like poor Cadmus Peveril, clinging to things that once were, failing to come to grips with the fact that the death of some things, even things we love very much, is a part of the process of learning to live. But we're just not comfortable with death. And this next statement, this isn't a criticism or a judgment by any means, but rather just an observation. But ours is a culture now where many people will hold a celebration of life service for a loved one instead of a funeral service. Because we are simply so uncomfortable with grief and sorrow, we have to shape even that process of grief into something that sounds like a celebration. We have in many ways lost our ability to acknowledge and feel death, and as a result, we're never really able to plumb the depths of the human experience. We rush into Easter Sunday with very little thought or meditation often, or honor given to the horrific and glorious nature of Good Friday, depending on your church tradition, of course. You see, death is ugly. It's painful. It's always hard, and death sometimes takes a long time. But here's the thing, it is absolutely essential. Now, granted, as a follower of Jesus, I have hope in the age to come when Jesus will return and restore all of creation, at which point there will be no more death ever. But until then, death is a part of life. It's necessary. There are things that have to die before life can truly blossom. I grew up in upstate New York, and we knew this all to be equally true and difficult. Fall came quickly, and nature exhibited the process of dying. And then winter would set in, sometimes as early as Halloween, and it could last well into April, months of existing in the cold, gray grave of winter. But spring was always on the other side. We know this: fall, winter, spring, life, death, rebirth. This is the pattern of life. In spiritual language, we often use the term wilderness to describe this barren space, the place where it feels like things have died and we're waiting for God to resurrect us and to bring us into rest and into His promises. We all face those seasons of wilderness, and we're never happy about it. We want the seasons of wilderness to pass quickly. But Jesus himself spent 40 days in isolation in the wilderness before stepping into his ministry. The Israelites spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness before stepping into the promised land. I can recall the time when I knew that God had planted in me the call to pastoral ministry. I was ready to roll. I was passionate. It was like fire burning in my bones. And yet, I had to wait a full 4 years of searching, of waiting, of praying before the right opportunity to step into that calling became clear. Those 4 years felt like a wilderness. But there were things in me that still needed to die during that time, and there were other things that needed to come to life simultaneously. It's funny though, when we are in that wilderness space, we often don't perceive those blessings, those things that are growing and being fertilized. It's really only on the other side of the wilderness that we can see what God was actually doing in us. Jesus clearly knew that death was necessary. In John chapter 12, he's speaking to his disciples about his coming death, and he says this, "Unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Anyone who loves their life will lose it, but anyone who hates their life in this world will keep it for eternal life." This is how bread is made. A kernel of wheat broken from the stem is gathered from the ground, gathered with other kernels and baked in the heat of the fire. Out comes bread. Again, the pattern of life. It's life, death, rebirth. So here's my point. Again, this is a season of death. In so many ways, these days are being marked by death. Now, to my earlier point, this doesn't mean that there's an absence of life. And I would actually contend that in these days, we're also seeing some of the best of humanity and of the church. But certainly, we are faced with death now. As of this recording, there have been over 80,000 people in the U.S. alone who have lost their lives due to COVID-19. That's a massive number. And each one of those 80,000+ is a person with a family and friends who are grieving. And socially, economically, relationally, individually, we are all feeling the loss, the death of the way things were. And much of that is obviously terrifying and tragic, but my plea for us is this. Let's not be so infatuated with the way things were that we stifle the chance for new things to grow. There are patterns in our lives that have ceased to exist right now. What if we truly took the time to think and pray? And what if we had conversations with our families and our friends about what life on the other side could look like? It's a good leadership conversation simply to ask the question that we say stop, keep, or start. Meaning, what has stopped in this season that would be better off staying stopped? Or what have you started doing during this time that you'd like to keep doing? And what are the possibilities for new ways of thinking and operating that can be dreamed up right now because you have the chance? Now, that's an inner question that cuts to our very identities, but it's also a corporate and an organizational question. And so I hope, I pray every family, every church, every business is thinking openly about these kinds of questions. Without a doubt, things have died. We are different today than we were 3 months ago, and going forward, things will not be the same. And so what possibilities are there to step into a new, more brilliant life? These are the questions I've been asking myself, and I've been pleading with many people around me to think on the same things. We've lost lives, real people. We've lost our security and sense of carefree freedom. But let's not be so in love with our old lives and our old ways of doing things and of existing that we rush through the real deep work of letting go of things that really were not serving us well. My fear in this moment, right now, as we start to enter phased reopening of the economy, is that we're so preoccupied with just getting back to normal that we'll have missed the opportunity for the real growth. We can't bake the bread unless we first let the seeds die. And so let's not fall into the same trap as poor old Cadmus Peveril and rush to a premature resurrection. That, too, I believe, would be a tragedy and a loss. Now here's the thing, as I said at the onset here, I began putting this podcast episode together a few weeks ago. And at the time, there were people all around me on social media, in the community, who were clamoring for this return to normal. We're seeing protests about it, for crying out loud. And these thoughts, they felt almost urgent to me to encourage us to slow down and to do some of that deep work. And the whole time, there was this underlying stress and frustration over not being able to find the time and the space to put this podcast episode together. And so it just kind of lingered in my head as an unfinished but important project. And on top of that, I was planning and scheduling and preparing for a series of other interviews with guests to keep new content coming through May and into the summer. And then one day it all hit me while I was in this wilderness space. I went out for a run thinking through this message, but also through the planning of upcoming episodes, and I felt the Lord say to me, "Listen to yourself." And it hit me immediately. I needed to let this die. And as soon as I formulated that conscious thought in my brain, I felt a weight lifted. I'd been putting so much pressure on myself internally to keep up with this season of the Ordinary Faith podcast that it was becoming burdensome. It was not life-giving. And so right there in my third mile out running on the trail, I knew I needed to put season 3 of the podcast to bed. And so friends, I'm taking my own advice and I'm grateful for that time in this 3-week wilderness, so to speak, where I was just frustrated not being able to get this out because God spoke that to me in that time. So I'm listening to the Holy Spirit, I believe, and I'm going to close this chapter for a bit. And all I know at this point is that for me to focus in on things that matter most, I've got to let this seed fall to the ground. And I'm not sure what's on the other side. I have guests lined up and conversations I'd love to continue having. So for now, I fully intend to pick up with season 4 of the podcast before long. But I also know that I need to let the seeds settle into the ground long enough to see what the Lord wants to grow on the other side. So all that is to say, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. I hope this message today is stirring some conversations and maybe confirming some things you've been feeling, maybe pushing and challenging you to slow down and think about some other things. But I truly appreciate your friendship and the way that we've been able to connect through this podcast. Season 3 has been the longest and most challenging season in just about every way, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love doing this podcast, and I love hearing from you about it. So please stay in touch. Check out, go to my website, danieljackson.us, and you can find my social links on there. I would love to hear from you as we head into a little bit of a break here. And hopefully we'll see you on the other side with a season 4. So I close out this message in this season just with the encouragement to continue to listen to the Lord as He's speaking in this moment, that we would not rush past what He's doing and saying, and that we would have eyes to see the new thing that God might want to do in our lives, in our communities, in our churches, in our relationships. And until next time, friends, remember, all it takes to bring heaven to earth is ordinary faith in extraordinary grace.